87.9 Pirate Cat Radio. We're back with Subversive Science filling in for Charm School. And I'm here with my good friend Kiefer. And we're just talking about whatever the hell we want to talk about in general. We got through our headlines. We're almost through the PSAs. We can pretty much just, you know, jabber on. You know, I have this soundtrack on from an Animatrix. And you guys have seen the movie The Matrix, right? Yeah, you have. Oh, that's good. Okay, so, oh, wait a second. You know what? I'm sorry. I had you on the wrong mic.
Are you kidding?
I'm totally
like genuine. This whole time.
No, not the whole time. Just that one time.
Horrible. People would think you were schizophrenic.
Yeah, it's true. But it would explain that phone call that I just got.
It would.
Hopeful one from the League of Pissed Off Voters, who were listening to the League of Pissed Off Scientists here.
Seriously.
and informing me that the levels of the microphone were probably a little too low. But at any rate, I just wanted to go back over the whole, like, argument of The Matrix, which is now about 10 years old now. The argument of The Matrix is we're living in just a system of actions and reactions, and that we actually don't really have much free will at all.
But that
we're plugged into free will. What am I trying to say? Runaway freight train, essentially, of information that we can't actually control. It's beginning to control us.
Is it an argument or a suggestion?
Okay, when I use the word arguments, I'm speaking from a rhetorical perspective.
Okay. Gotcha.
And basically, what's the difference between a statement and an argument? Well, an argument is a statement in context.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Gotcha. Get closer to my. Actually, I can't.
Hello.
There you go. Yeah. So that particular microphone, I don't think is sensitive enough or something like that.
I have to talk like this.
You have to talk like this. Yeah. Introduce yourself,
this is totally
please.
Different.
By the way,
my name is Mark, also known as the Lazy Magician, over here at Pirate Cat Radio. I am your new intern for the 8 to 10 on Fridays.
Awesome.
The Lazy Magician. How did you get that? Magician. Do you just not do any tricks?
You know, it was more like, you know, Merlin Magician. You know, like that kind of magician.
So. Uh huh.
Just definitely like my wizards and medieval shit, you know, and I don't know, I see the magic in life. I feel I can work it at times, but, you know, I'm definitely,
you know what,
I smoke my pot and my cigarettes. And
lazy magician. I need to move you to a different mic because I'm pretty sure that mic is like on the fritz because you're like coming in and out. I think that might be the problem, right, in a nutshell.
Hello, that's much better.
Yeah, well, that one's pretty clear.
Way better. Okay, cool. There we go. That may have been our earlier problem. So we do have kind of a few glitches to work out in this studio, but, you know.
It's not perfect.
No, it's not perfect, but it's fun.
It's pretty rad, though.
Most things that are fun are pretty imperfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and that, to bring it back to your Matrix, you know, thing about perfect, imperfect, you know, destiny, no destiny, free will, no free will. I think does it really matter? It's just your perspective. You know what I mean? It's not really going to change much. You have to decide that for yourself. And it's really the experience that you have in life that will decide that for you, or, you know, create the thoughts that, you know, you'll choose one way or the other.
Well, but
zing.
I think it has serious consequences.
Well,
because if you don't have, let's say you don't have free will, and it turns out that we are just pure automata, given a specific set of inputs, there will be an output. That brings our entire criminal system into question, because who now is to blame? If we don't have free will, why are you punishing these people that got a certain set of inputs that caused them to do a specific output? There's blame anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's very significant to
I understand the significance, but I think we're overthinking the issue. I think I'd look at it more like how cells function, you know, together to make up an organ in your body without knowing, you know, they're living their little individual cell lives, and they're unaware that they're making up your lung, which is functioning, you know, a part of your body for you to breathe.
But that calls into question the idea of knowing. So
right.
What is it?
I mean,
can you define knowing just purely in terms of a cluster of neurons, or can you, like, according to recent research showing that bacteria has a communication system among other bacteria, can you call that knowing?
I don't think knowing, and from my personal experience, knowing is not something that you talk about. It's something that you experience. You know what I mean? It's something direct that you have to experience for yourself in your life, or you can never know something is true.
It's like phenomenology.
I mean, yeah, if you don't have the basis for something, then how could you possibly understand it? I mean, you know, that's why some people relate to you, because they've had experiences that have taught them the same things.
What about something abstract? For example, calculus taken out of context. There's a lot of calculus that's just totally abstract. You can't apply it to everyday experience. Case in point, you know, quantum mechanics, there's a lot of calculus you use there. And quantum mechanics you can't apply to everyday experience, but you can start to develop an understanding. But you could never experience the quantum world. It's just not possible.
So what is the purpose of quantum mechanics then? What purpose does it serve in the world?
A lot. It's kind of the basis of...
I'm not a math guy, so this is an honest question.
I understand.
You know?
Well, yeah. So quantum mechanics allows us to make things like lasers and microwaves.
Okay.
And, you know, many of your common items, transistors...
So it serves a purpose. I mean, in everyday life, it certainly does.
It serves a purpose, but the mathematics themselves can be taken totally out of context. So.
Right.
And there's plenty of mathematics that you cannot apply to the real world. So the question is, if you understand those, can you? Can you even know about them, since there is no way to experience them, period?
Well, if they are responsible for creating microwaves and things,
then aren't we experiencing them?
Let's
talk about convex theory over topological spaces. There's no application for that. It's something that some mathematicians are expert in. They understand it totally. They could talk about it far more in depth than I could, but there's nothing to apply it to.
Why are they so drawn to it then?
It's an interesting.
But if there's no control,
So you're changing the question to one of interest to one of knowing, and you said you can't know unless you experience. And I just gave you an example of something that can't be experienced,
right?
But that people know about.
But see,
I would challenge
that they what do they know? I mean, if they don't have something that they've experienced in life, something to validate that theory, then how can it be true?
Well, they're using other mathematics, which does apply.
Right. But that isn't the same thing.
Okay, so then
isn't it?
Not to me, no, it's not.
Not to you.
Not
yeah.
to you.
Well, you're asking me here, you know, and I'm telling you what I think.
I'm just very passionate about it.
You guys discuss.
Okay, discuss we are. But I don't know. I mean, I think if there's not a practical application for something, then why don't you take all that time and energy towards something that will be productive now?
So... So that one caught.
Okay, we're bringing him on the air.
Yeah, hold on. That one caught my attention.
Hello?
Hello, hello.
Hello.
Who is this?
So, hey, this is DJ Spider.
Hi, DJ Spider from the League. The League of Pissed Off Voters.
League of Pissed Off Voters show.
Can't get enough.
Well, I can't get enough of the Pirate Cat Radio. I love it. But about the idea of like whether or not we can experience quantum mechanics, I've always wondered about that of whether, you know, brain functioning, neuroscience, neurons, and all that kind of stuff is at the quantum scientific level. It seems like that you're getting down to small enough masses and high enough velocities that you could get some quantum effects of that. I've never been able to find any definitive yes or no answers on that. But.
Well, okay, so the definitive answer, according to what we know so far, is that there isn't any evidence of quantum entanglement in consciousness. Mm-hmm. But that said, I would be very surprised if we didn't find in the next 5 to 10 years some evidence that quantum entanglement does have something to do with consciousness. We just found this really cool thing out about photosynthesis, which is that a lot of the control functions of what regulates how much chlorophyll is made and things like that do involve quantum events. So we're going at the subatomic level. So, yeah, but in terms of brains, we just don't know. But that doesn't mean we can't speculate wildly and, you know, have a ridiculous conversation about it.
Sure.
I would guess there's probably not going to be quantum entanglement phenomenon discovered in the brain.
No. Well, yeah. Not discovered.
Well, I don't think there'll be any correlations found there, is my guess. For one, most of the interactions between the cells take place just with ion exchange, which maybe I just don't know what could possibly go on there that would be... entangled.
Yeah, and then that plus would be any extra information that we would need.
Right,
basically.
And then entanglement's so easy to break. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in the brain. So there might be quantum events and quantum processes or processes that work on the quantum level.
Yeah.
But that's different than the specific phenomenon of quantum entanglement, which can be broken pretty easily. Hence the problem with quantum computing.
Yeah, it's true, right. But I almost see that it's operating, it could operate on a statistical likelihood kind of scale, where...
But that's not necessarily entanglement.
Yeah, I guess not. But, well, so the problem that most people have with evolutionary biology is that they can't understand that things happen on a statistical scale as opposed to an individual scale. So, like, how could you know, you get a chicken from a dinosaur, like, that just doesn't make any sense in their brains. And then you think, well, spread out among a population of, like, millions and millions and millions of dinosaurs, things that were once improbable become inevitable.
Right.
Because of the statistics of the situation.
You watch enough stuff for long enough, just about any damn thing will happen.
Right. So
some mathematician said that, but I can't remember who.
Somebody cool, obviously.
Right.
But I just wonder if there are any quantum events that can influence maybe like one cell, so that something that previously was improbable for a change of mind, you know, a change of habit. I don't know, something like that.
So is this going into free will?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because we don't have that.
No, we don't.
Well, may I interject for a moment here?
May you?
Sure.
That's an open question.
I will interject. I will interject for a moment here, because, you know, I'm definitely not as versed in everything that you guys are discussing, but to kind of answer a couple questions and throw my opinion out there for the people, I guess... The thing, what we were talking about all this stuff, is it applicable and is it experience, you know, is something you can experience and whatnot and free will, yada, yada. Where was I trying to take this? I'm sorry. This is the lazy part of the lazy magician here.
Wah, wah.
Wah, wah. No, but I think if all that energy were taken towards experiencing life, then there are things that if you focus your energy in different ways other than trying to reason it out and talk about it, there are things that you can experience now that other people will explain 10 to 15 years from now that people will say is, you know, bogus or whatever, but you can have experiences in your life firsthand that you don't need to be able to reasonably understand. In boxing everything into a reasonable explanation, you deny yourself the, you know, 90% of the rest of your brain or the full experience of living your life.
You can certainly make that argument in terms of how should we live.
Right.
Like, what is Conan, what is best in life?
Well, no,
you know,
it's
that sort of thing.
But it's the experience thing. If you try it out, you try things out for yourself, you will see inevitably that, you know, reactions happen.
But if you try out creating for instance programming out a game of folding proteins and you really, really enjoy the experience of unfolding and folding proteins, that's your experience and you
right.
love it.
I'm not saying it's any less rich, but I'm saying everything is much simpler than we as human beings make it. And that you know, why can everything else on Earth...
Maybe they're much more complex.
Well, and to me, it's the same thing. I think they're both equally valid because you have black and you have white, you know, and that's the way the world is. Both sides are always valid in a certain context. It really, everything shifts and everything changes. So why do you have to be right about something?
Whoa.
It's just going to change back.
So, okay. So I liked what you were saying up until you said, so why do you have to be right about everything?
Right. That seems like a totally...
What? Why does anyone have to be right about anything?
Well, I don't think we were ever talking about, like, who's right and who's wrong.
Well, but I guess what I'm saying is, you know, people argue black or people argue white. People argue left. People argue right.
Ah.
And
I see.
you know, my point is that just consolidate it, that we're all just experiencing life and the learning process is a shifting process. It's a back and forth and people are all at a different place in that process. And mm-hmm. you need to respect that, you know, for things to function better and cleaner and for us all to have a better experience humans.
All right, great. So using that argument, how come we don't respect where criminals come from? How
can I do. I mean,
yeah, maybe you. But
it's
as
an
a society,
individual
we're not.
Thing.
This is not like us versus level, you.
Right. Well,
this
because
is, you know,
because any system is going to be defunct. People have to stand up and take credit for their own lives, have that respect in their own lives, and eventually, if people were living as individuals in respect for each other, we would outnumber the government. You know what I mean? People would be living naturally with
we would outnumber the government?
Right.
Individuals.
We are the government.
Individuals would outnumber the government. We would be more powerful. They couldn't control us anymore.
Well, but
you know?
Technically they only can control us because we allow them to have that control.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. Take it back in your life as an individual. That's the only way it'll ever happen.
Yeah. Huh. This is like going all over the map.
Yeah,
that's how I am.
From
I mean, it's
phenomenology to anarchy to.
But is that a bad thing?
No. It just makes it hard to stay coherent on one subject.
I think that's just me.
I don't even
you know, take it or leave it. That's just me.
Anymore.
It started with the Matrix.
Oh, yeah. experience versus...
Unplugging or plugging into the Matrix. Right. Do you want the red pill or the blue pill? Would you... So, red pill or blue pill, you guys?
I don't remember which is which.
Neither do I, actually.
I'm always looking for truth. I want to know what's really happening. I'm a seeker.
Are you
know?
Willing to accept truth without experience?
Truth is experience for me.
I would argue that anything that can be known has to be experienced. I would make that argument. But I would argue that a lot of the things that people don't consider experience are experience.
It's all experience.
Like, for instance, the experience of deriving by logic a set of mathematical principles that describe something that doesn't actually exist. I would call that an experience.
Yeah, and everything is an experience leading you to somewhere, right? And that somewhere is the big, you know...
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
No.
Okay, well, definitely.
The only thing that I know, quote-unquote, about the universe is that it's a novelty-generating machine with complexity conservationally added... With a complexity conservation mechanism built in. So we're constantly generating novelty... And we are conserving the complexity as we go along. So I think the universe is getting more complex. And we know, just from a data perspective, I want to talk a little bit about like this conference that I went to last week. I went to this Cybar Camp conference in Palo Alto, which is termed an unconference, because basically a bunch of scientists, researchers, and journalists just all show up and we hang out and we go like, okay, like tomorrow we're going to have this like totally wacky panel about... you know, spinning, sensationalizing science, which was my panel. And this other guy did, a friend of mine did a panel called Psychedelics, What the Fuck, which was pretty cool. Anyway, it was awesome time. But the theme that kept coming up over and over and over again was that, holy shit, we're generating so much data and we don't know what to do with it. And people were coming up to me and we're just talking about, I'm talking about their work and stuff like that. I'm trying to be a good connector, a good, you know, journalist. Essentially, and it kept coming down to like I have to learn to throw out data, like I have to learn to just like release this data because there's nothing I can do with it. So you would think that, you know, you go through the motions of setting up a good experiment and you're going to save this data forever because it's always going to be useful to somebody. But it turns out that we are generating so much experimental data that the old data from like even 2 years ago, you know, normally it's like 4 years ago, but as we generate more science, the window of time in which data is useful goes less and less, right? And we are not actually creating the tools that we need to analyze this data fast enough to make use of it. So we're constantly throwing out data. We're constantly generating more data than we can handle. What does this lead to? That's why we have a term for this, actually. It's the singularity. We're leading towards a place in which there's more data than we can process. And beyond this point, this singularity, We can't make any good predictions. We don't know what the world's going to be like, and we don't know how we're going to handle all this information.
But so. do you think that predictions are, I guess, I was going to say, do you think predictions are always reliable, or, you know, you think statistics are always reliable? I mean, if we're talking about humanity as a whole, I feel like there are probably patterns larger than humanity's existence itself in the universe that, you know, there's always going to be that outside factor that you could never see coming, you know, and life does that to you.
There's this whole concept of emergence where you could know everything in detail. Let's take the brain, for example. You can know everything there is to know about a neuron and how it communicates with neighboring neurons, but you could never take that information and predict consciousness.
Okay.
It's just not possible.
Right.
Although there's some physicists that would still argue that, there's just so much data mounting against them that eventually they'll have to admit it or just look like imbeciles. Take quantum mechanics, for example. It's supposed to be the natural extension of classical mechanics down to the subatomic world. The problem is nobody's ever found the equations to make quantum mechanics match up with classical mechanics. They don't exist. Despite the brightest minds through... Well, actually, they've probably just given up by now.
Yeah.
They don't exist, and that's because there's some gap there where the properties of classical mechanics emerge out of the quantum world.
Yeah.
So
similarly, you could, just to provide not a counterexample for instance, but like a sort of a complementary example, you actually can derive chemistry, the rules of chemistry, from the rules of physics. Like, you can derive, like, the interactions of chemicals from physics, but you don't. Because it turns out that using the principles of chemistry, which are, I guess you could call a layer of abstraction higher, like in a...
From quantum mechanics.
We don't, because the complications and the equations and things like that just wouldn't be worth your time. We can make perfectly accurate very, very, very accurate predictions about how chemicals react without doing the derivations from physics every single time.
Right. Well, so, as a counterexample to that, ice crystallizes in, I think, 11 different forms, all unique. None of them have been predicted by quantum mechanics.
Wow.
You can't take quantum mechanics and predict any of those.
Uh-huh.
So right there is a massive failing of quantum mechanics to a very simple molecule, a very simple system. And we can't even use it there to make accurate predictions.
There was a guy at the Noise Bridge talks last night who was just like, quantum mechanics is a lie. And like, I was so pleased that we had a dude like that.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, just like showing like, basically, you know, the Stephen Wolfram's A New Kind of Science how basically brazenly arrogant it is, except that he actually is brilliant.
Right.
Well, take that brazenly, take that brazenly arrogant opinion and then base it on some complete nonsense, and then you had this, you know, you had this one particular guy who showed up last night.
Perfect.
It was great.
That guy.
Quantum mechanics is great for so many reasons.
Well, I mean, I think everything, I don't know, it oftentimes sounds like, you know, I'm arguing back and forth on both sides, which in effect, I guess to some degree I am, but I believe that everything has a purpose in existence, you know, and that's a personal belief. That's back to the free will, I guess, what we were talking about and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, you have the choice to do what you want to do in each moment with your body. You will definitely suffer consequences
if you have free will.
Right, but you do. I mean, you can do what you want right now. You can go out within your means.
It could be totally illusory, though. There's no reason to assume we have free will.
Well, there's no reason to assume anything. I mean, except for your experience. That's my point. You know, you could theorize about things.
But it still could be an illusion.
Right, anything could. I mean, life could be a dream, right? How do I know that this is real? How do I know that we're communicating?
You're taking it then to a level where there's just no point in talking anymore. What I'm saying is, given the confines of the physical world and what we know about ourselves, there's still no reason to believe we have free will. Unless you just want to hang on to that on faith, that would be your reason. But there's no...
But I can make my own decisions. What is that?
Maybe,
I don't know. What is that?
Maybe you can't, right?
We got to wrap it up because we got like a couple minutes left to go.
Are you kidding?
I'm not kidding, actually.
I feel gypped.
You feel gypped?
I do.
Well, I'm sorry.
It's because I came
you
in.
Can you can hang out and when Casey comes in, you know, you can hang out for the comedy show.